You are listening to a sermon by Brent Siemens, recorded on Sunday, September 14th, 2014, at the Point Grey Interminonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Well, good morning. It's good to be back here with you. This morning, I'll be sharing from Genesis 44, as was read for us this morning. This latter part of Genesis is often referred to as the Joseph story, but I think it should rather be called the Judah story. Joseph is certainly a hero in the story in so many ways. He has the gift to interpret dreams from God. He resists the seductions of Potiphar's wife. He rises to power in Egypt, from household slave to prince, and he forgives his 10 older brothers who sold him into slavery. But in the end, I think it's Judah who emerges as the true hero in this story. And as a result, Judah is promised the line of kingship in the house of Israel, as well as the promise of the Messiah. So this morning, I would like to look specifically at Judah and at his climactic speech in Genesis 44, where he sacrificially offers to lay down his life for a brother. So to start, let's take a step back and look briefly at the background to Judah. Judah is the fourth oldest in a very large family of 12 brothers and at least one sister. His father Jacob has two wives, Rachel and Leah. This family is really struggling. It's deeply divided, as we will soon see. It's riveted with favoritism and jealousy, hating and murderous plotting, scandal and countless surprises. And it all culminates, in my opinion, in the chapter that was read for us this morning, Genesis 44. Judah's first introduced back in chapter 37. This is the chapter where Joseph is sold into slavery by his 10 older brothers, of which Judah is one of them. These 10 older brothers hate Joseph because their father loves him more than his other sons. And so they plot to get rid of him. It is favoritism that is one of the long-standing problems within this family, and it seems to me that it's largely Jacob's fault, who loves Joseph more than his other sons, and who loves his wife Rachel more than his wife Leah. Yet even Jacob himself was a favorite, we remember, to his mother because he worked in the house, while his brother Esau was a favorite to their father because he was a hunter of game. The biblical author even portrays Jacob as her son and Esau as his son. The favoritism continues to plague the next generation, and the 10 older brothers throw Joseph into a pit after stripping him of his privileged multicolored robe. But upon seeing some traders in the distance, Judah suggested selling him as a slave for 20 pieces of silver. He says, "What profit is it if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites." And his brothers listen to him. This is Judah's first recorded speech within the narrative. Often the first recorded speech by a character plays a crucial role in the author's characterization of that person. Here, Judah's first speech is a cold calculation of how to make a little profit by selling a brother as a slave. Judah is mentioned again in the very next chapter, chapter 38. Scholars have often thought this passage has been a later addition to the Joseph story, as it doesn't seem to fit within the larger narrative. But I think it fits perfectly well once we see how the story centers on Judah. In Genesis 38, Judah's portrayal is no better. Here, he leaves all of his brothers in order to live among the Canaanites. As Joseph went down to Egypt, it says Judah went down from his brothers. There's a ring of betrayal and forsakenness toward his family. There he marries a Canaanite, which is something Abraham's family wasn't supposed to do. His wife remains nameless. It's one detail among others that suggests her lack of significance in Judah's life. All of Judah's attention is directed towards their three sons, of which the two oldest die because they're wicked. Judah thinks they die because his daughter-in-law, Tamar, must be cursed, and so he refuses to give her his youngest son as a way to protect him. Yet later in the chapter, his daughter-in-law successfully tricks Judah into sleeping with her by acting as a prostitute so that she can continue the family line. So far, it's a very sad story. Not only does Judah initiate the selling into slavery younger brother because he's a favorite child, he also forsakes the rest of his family, marries a Canaanite, appears to be superstitious, lacks any awareness of God, and is easily tempted. Judah does not begin well. If there's going to be a hero in this story, Judah is the least likely character to rise to the occasion. But we're in for a surprise. Judah reappears in chapters 42 and 43. This time, fortunately, he's back with his brothers. Jacob, the father, urges his sons to go to Egypt to buy food two different times because the famine is so severe in the land. On their first trip, Benjamin, the youngest and the remaining favorite son, because he too is a child of Rachel, the favorite wife, doesn't accompany the brothers because his father is worried that harm could befall him. Yet in Egypt, Joseph for some reason detains Simeon, the second oldest brother, saying they can't return to Egypt to buy food unless their youngest brother is with them, that is, Benjamin. When their father urges them to return to Egypt the second time because the famine continues to be so severe, Judah reminds them that they cannot return to Egypt unless Benjamin accompanies them. It obviously greatly worries Jacob to send Benjamin to Egypt, as Benjamin is the only son left to Rachel. But Judah makes a remarkable guarantee in chapter 43, where he says to his father, "Send the boy along with me, and we will go at once, so that we and you and our children may live and not die. I myself will guarantee his safety. You can hold me personally responsible for him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him here before you, I will bear the blame before you all of my life." And so Jacob lets Benjamin go, entrusting him into Judah's hands. What was he thinking? Unfortunately, things go bad, and Judah is put to the ultimate test of loyalty to the promise he made to his father. Yes, Joseph does provide grain for the brothers. He releases Simeon from prison, and he sends them back on their way. But unknown to them, Joseph has also put their money back in their sacks and his silver cup among Benjamin's possessions. A short while after the brothers leave, Joseph sends his steward after them, who accuses them of stealing his master's silver cup. "Why," he says, "have you returned evil for good?" The brothers are astonished at the accusation of theft and bravely say that the one in whom the cup is found will die and the rest will become slaves. The steward simply responds, saying, "He who is found with the silver cup shall be my servant, and the rest of you shall be innocent." So the steward searches their sacks, beginning with the oldest, and the cup is found in the sack of Benjamin, the youngest. It's a worst-case scenario for Benjamin, for Jacob the father, and possibly for Judah, as he's pledged his guarantee for the safety of his youngest brother. And it's in this situation that we find Judah's impassioned speech in Genesis 44, as he speaks before Joseph back in the city. The situation is set up perfectly by Joseph. It seems to me to be a test. He's recreating the same scenario in which he was sold as a slave by these same 10 older brothers many years earlier. He knows Benjamin has become the new favorite son of their father, as he never accompanied them on their first journey to Egypt. Joseph later provoked the jealousy of the older brothers when he served Benjamin 5 times the portion compared to the rest when he hosted them in his house in the city. And then he places the silver cup within Benjamin's sack in order to endanger specifically Benjamin's life, and silver in all of the brothers' sacks in order to give them the opportunity to go home with profit. Silver plays a prominent role in this story. The only people to potentially come to Benjamin's defense are the 10 older brothers. And we know what a group of roughnecks they are like. I think Benjamin's in trouble. And Joseph offers these 10 older brothers the chance to go up to your father in peace, with silver and food in their bags. The questions before Joseph are, Are my brothers any different? Will they let another favorite son go into slavery while they shrink home with profit? Does hatred, jealousy, resentment still rule the family? Can I trust them? Can I reveal myself to them? It is precisely in this situation, Benjamin, a potential captive in Egypt, that Judah emerges as a leader among the brothers. Genesis 44:14 begins saying, "And Judah and his brothers came to the house of Joseph." Meyer Sternberg, a Jewish literary critic who I find very helpful, he notes how earlier the brothers had left the city with the simple designation men, but now they return as Judah and his brothers. It's a phrase that places Judah at the center of attention, but it also hints at the solidarity among the nine other brothers with Judah, who has pledged himself for Benjamin's protection. In fact, the action of all of the brothers expresses solidarity with Benjamin, as they've all torn their clothes in grief, and they've all returned back to the city, even though they were offered the chance to go free. With Judah taking the leadership among the brothers, he explains to Joseph, whom they still don't recognize, that all of the brothers will become his slaves, both we and the one in whom the cup was found, verse 16. This initial defense by Judah substitutes slavery for the death penalty for the one in whom the cup was found. It also places all of the brothers as slaves, along with Benjamin. But Joseph is not interested in acquiring more slaves. It's a test, and he wants to know the heart and the character of his older brothers, and how they would treat a favorite son of their father when he's in trouble and the rest can go free. So Joseph responds, "Far be it from me to do this. The man in whose possession the cup has been found, he shall be my slave. But as for you, go up in peace to your father." Joseph has successfully isolated Benjamin and has created another opportunity for the rest of the brothers to go home. The test is on. It then says that Judah drew near to him. Verse 18. It is at this point that Judah opens wide his heart to Joseph and ushers forth this incredible speech. He carefully and honestly explains their situation and how Benjamin is a child of their father's old age. His brother has died. He is the only remaining son to his mother, and his father loves him. The neutral reference Benjamin gives way in verse 26 to terms like "our brother" and "our younger brother," showing inclusion of Benjamin with the other 10 brothers. Judah again retells their father's preferential treatment for Benjamin and how his life is tied up with the life of the boy. There is no hint of jealousy, envy, or hatred in his speech. He even quotes his father referring to Rachel as his wife, as if she's the only one, who bore him 2 sons, as if the other 10 sons don't exist. Judah's language shifts from the collective we to the singular I in verse 30 as he begins to express his personal responsibility for the boy. He tells Joseph in verse 32 that he has become a guarantee for the boy. It would be impossible to return home without their youngest brother, for that would create utter grief for their father. The next verse, verse 33, is the high point of Judah's speech. It is Judah's stunning act of sacrificial love. It is here that Judah offers to take Benjamin's place as a slave. Joseph is insistent that one slave will remain for the theft, and Judah offers to be that one slave in place of Benjamin. The one who had earlier initiated selling a favorite son of their father into slavery now offers to take the place as a slave for the one remaining son of Rachel. Judah says, "Now then, please let your servant remain here as my Lord's slave in place of the boy, and let the boy return with his brothers. How can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? No, do not let me see the misery that would come upon my father." Joseph is stunned by the speech. In fact, the very next verse, Genesis 45, verse 1, says, "Then Joseph could not control himself." He knows now that he can trust his brothers. He realizes now that his older brothers are not the same people they used to be. especially Judah. They would lay down their life for a brother, even a brother who's more loved than they are. And Joseph realizes that these brothers love their father and would certainly not want to bring grief upon him anymore. It's Judah's anguished cry for his father and his deep concern for his youngest brother that draws out the cry from Joseph to his brothers regarding their father at the very beginning of the next chapter, saying, "I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?" I think there's a number of things that we can learn from the story of Judah and his brothers. Here are four, briefly. First of all, we learn that God doesn't give up on people. Judah's a person who begins life very poorly, but he ends up becoming a saint. The one who sold a brother into slavery, left his brothers, marries a Canaanite, visits a prostitute, demonstrates no awareness of God in his life, ends up becoming a hero of faith in his old age. I think this should encourage us not to give up on other people, because God does not give up on them, nor to give up on ourselves, as God is still seeking to transform us more and more into his likeness. The story of Judah instills hope for transformation in each of our lives, no matter how old we might be or what consists of our past. Secondly, we learn that God is able to use difficult situations in our lives to bring about good. This is one of the things that Joseph learned while in Egypt. Even though his brothers sold him as a slave, God used it for good in order to preserve many lives. And Bruce Waltke wonders if the difficult situation that Judah faced in losing all but his youngest son made him more empathetic for his father's own attachment to his youngest son, helping him in this great act of sacrificial love. And so the story of Judah reminds us that God is able to bring good out of difficult and painful situations. Thirdly, we learn that God desires us to be our brother's keeper. This is one of the major themes in the book of Genesis, where the theme emerges in chapter 4, where Cain kills Abel, and God asks Cain, "Where is your brother?" Cain's response is, "Am I my brother's keeper?" It's a rhetorical response with the implied answer from Cain's perspective, no, I'm not my brother's keeper. But the very fact that God asked the question suggests that Cain is to be his brother's keeper. And brother in the Bible refers to more than just family relations. "Where is your brother? Where is your sister?" the Lord asks. Siblings struggle all throughout the book of Genesis. We see this in the story of Cain and Abel, Jacob and Esau, Rachel and Leah, Joseph and his brothers. But Genesis says we are to be keepers of one another. And Judah does this perfectly for Benjamin. He overcomes sentiments of hatred, jealousy, resentment, and envy in order to help a brother in need. Judah becomes the prototype of what it means to be a brother's keeper. It's like the Charles Dickens novel, A Tale of Two Cities, where one friend lays down his life in place of another friend. The story of Judah teaches us that we're to keep one another through acts of sacrificial love. And finally, we learn that God in Jesus has acted for us as Judah acted for Benjamin. In fact, Jesus is a descendant of Judah through his daughter-in-law, Tamar. Jesus said, "Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends." This is the example of Judah when he offered to lay down his life for Benjamin. And this is the example of Judah's greater son, Jesus, who died in our place so that we might have eternal life. The story of Judah anticipates how God will one day lay down his own life in the person of Jesus out of sacrificial love so that we might be